Welcome back for the last half hour of Issues Etc. today. Tomorrow on the program, the early church fathers and biblical interpretation. How did the fathers of the early church read the Bible? Chris Armstrong of Christian History Magazine will be our guest tomorrow to talk about that. Also, we'll be talking with Dr. Gene Edward Veith of World Magazine about Christian symbolism in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. I know that many of you are already aware of the fact that tomorrow is the debut of the third in the trilogy. I heard from somebody here at the station, 3 hours and 20 minutes long this movie is. 3 hours and 20 minutes long. Now, it'll be worth it, from my perspective, to go and sit there for 3 hours and 20 minutes. And if it is, as people say, it is the best of the three, and for my reading of the books, and I'll admit to you, I'm a junkie, I've read the books dozens of times, and I'm not exaggerating. For my reading of the books, it's the if you're looking for Christian symbolism, not only a Christian worldview, but kind of parallel Christian symbolism in the Rings trilogy, the last book has it in spades. We'll talk about that tomorrow with Dr. Gene Edward Veith of World Magazine. For the remainder of the program, Wesley Smith joins us. He's senior fellow from the Discovery Institute. One of the subjects that is hot on the presses right now is New Jersey Assembly Bill 2840, having to do with cloning. It's a bit of a Trojan horse, says Wesley Smith. We'll talk with him about that. He's an author of several books, including The Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, and he's also written a recent column for the Weekly Standard titled Cloning in New Jersey. Wesley, welcome back.
I'm feeling like the orcs are attacking, Todd.
This bill passed in the New Jersey Assembly, Bill 2840. What is it?
Well, it is a bill that would explicitly legalize human cloning. It is a bill that would allow the human cloned embryo to be implanted in a woman's womb, and the reason why that is permitted is because it's not prohibited. That which is not illegal is by definition legal. It then says that cloning a human being is a felony, but listen to how they describe the term human being. Quote, as used in this section, cloning a human being means the replication of a human individual by cultivating a cell with genetic material, that's the cloning process, through the egg, embryo, fetal, and newborn stages into a new human individual. Thus, if you create a clone and cultivate it only through the fetal stages, not into the newborn stage, and then kill it, you have complied with the law and you have done nothing wrong. This would allow cloned fetal vivisection. I hate to be blunt, but that's precisely what it would allow. It is specifically designed to allow that, and it hid behind embryonic stem cell research, which has nothing to do with cloning, so that newspapers like the New York Times would say, oh, it's only about embryonic stem cell research, legalizing that. The only problem with that is it's already legal throughout the country. It's not against the law to engage in embryonic stem cell research. The issue that we fought in 2001 had not to do with making it illegal, but prohibiting federal funding, which is a big difference.
To the best of your knowledge, did the lawmakers in New Jersey who passed this bill, were they aware of the fact, were they aware of the implications, not just the implications, but the direct consequence of what they were passing?
I hope not. I mean, it's pretty dreadful to think that these legislators would pass something and they didn't know what they were voting for. But I know some of them did, because it was specifically, there's a reason not to outlaw implantation. I mean, I'm against human cloning altogether, as you know, and I'm against the Hatch-Feinstein bill in the federal government, the Senate right now, which would ban implantation but allow a cloned embryo to be maintained for 14 days for research purposes and then require it to be destroyed. That's a radical bill. That permits the creation of a human life for the purpose of destruction and research, and that destruction would have to occur in the federal legislation at the 14th day. This bill does not put any of those time limits in. It does so on purpose, because there are things that can be done with a cloned human, assuming they ever learn how to do that, that is gestated for a period of time that they cannot do in a dish, in a Petri dish. Moreover, there was identical legislation introduced in Texas last year with the same terminology. Therefore, there's a design here. And by the way, here in California, we passed a bill that permits human cloning, the SCNT, somatic nuclear cell transfer, and requires destruction at the 14th day. And one of the primary movers and shakers of that was challenged at a medical research seminar, how could you allow it to be stopped at the 14th day? And he said, well, you know, first steps first. Because, we had to get the bill passed. And see, once you pass the bill saying that SCNT should be legal, well, you've created the principle, then it's only a matter of what you do with the human life you've created through cloning. There's no intention on part of these researchers to limit it to the 14th day. And by the way, there's no intention to limit it to non-reproductive cloning either, because once they've done the research to make it, quote, safe, they perceive it, National Academy of Sciences, certainly the bioethics movement, human cloning is just another reproductive technology like IVF. This is unfettering human cloning to do anything you want with it. And this is part of the agenda, and that's why the New Jersey law was written the way it was.
Okay, so the lawmakers may well have been either willfully or blissfully ignorant
right.
of what it was they were passing, but there is no doubt in your mind that stem cell researchers, cloning researchers, who do by definition of their very job descriptions know what they're really talking about here, they do know what this law permits and what this
sure.
law does not render illegal.
It was pushed. First off, it wasn't written by the legislator. The terms were written by somebody from biotech. Secondly, it was pushed and promoted by the Biotechnology Information Organization, if that's the name of it, but it's BIO, which is the lobbying group for the biotechnology industry. Listen, let me be blunt here. Biotechnologists have a financial interest and a ideological interest in unfettered research into human cloning. The struggle over human cloning is not just over the sanctity of human life, not just over whether or not we will allow human life to be treated as a harvestable crop, a manufactured product, but it is also a very important and crucial debate over whether or not science will continue to serve society and serve humankind, or will come to dominate it. And I kid you not, what many people in research now believe is that their unfettered ability to engage in scientific inquiry is a constitutional right as important or more important than the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, and so forth.
So in other words, they considered this is not just a matter of, well, we need to continue to do new things to get the grant money. This is ideological.
It is very ideological, and that's why you see so many scientists basically skewering the science. You know, the New England Journal of Medicine, I believe we talked about this a few months ago on your program, it wrote an editorial. And I'm not saying it's wrong to write an editorial in favor of human cloning research. That's certainly an acceptable thing to do. But what the New England Journal of Medicine editorial said was, we are now going to choose the peer-reviewed science articles we publish on the basis of whether it can further the debate and further promote research. That means you're turning a journal known for its objective material presented in its pages. Now, I'm not talking about its editorials, but its subjective science papers, they're being politicized. So to the point where, how do I trust that the New England Journal of Medicine is going to publish credible research papers, either the ones that are done for it, whether they're credible, or whether they're refusing to publish papers that will hurt their political perspective. For example, that adult stem cells are curing human heart disease. Adult stem cells in mice and in people are beginning to cure things such as Parkinson's disease, or at least cause remission, certainly successfully treated. There are all kinds of breakthroughs occurring with adult and non-embryonic stem cells that are not getting reported, not only in the establishment media, but quite often in some of the major medical journals of our time, although others are reporting it because that's how we find out about it.
Doesn't that call into question the entire peer review process?
Well, that's what
well?
I'm worried about. The peer review process is becoming politicized. It has not completely become politicized, but it is in danger of it. We learned, for example, from the Washington Post a few years ago that there was a adult stem cell breakthrough reported. And Washington Post reported quite properly that the authors of this journal had edited it so as not to cause problems for embryonic stem cell researchers. In other words, they had skewed their research findings to have a political impact, or more precisely, not to have a political impact that they did not want. This calls into danger the very scientific method, which is supposed to be about dispassionate fact-finding, let the political chips fall where they may. That is falling aside because of this ideology of scientism, in which science is now deemed as the salvation of humankind, and scientific inquiry is deemed more precious than freedom of speech. This is very ideological. It is skewing science. Some of the scientists are writing about that themselves, worrying about the politicization of the process. And if we're not careful, we're going to end up with junk science, just like the eugenics movement was junk science.
So already in 2002, at the end of the year, about 1 year ago, The New Jersey Senate passed this version of the bill without a dissenting vote.
Without a dissenting vote.
Did anyone raise an alarm? Did anyone urge that they rethink this before the Assembly got hold of this bill?
Oh, of course. But, of course, the people who did it primarily were people from New Jersey Right to Life and the Catholic Church. And the media and the liberal politicians, if the Catholic Church is on one side of an issue or the Right to Life groups on one side of an issue, they tend to jump on the other side without even a moment's thought. You know, there's an intellectual laziness here among people, particularly, it seems to me, from those who claim to be pro-choice on abortion. And this is not about abortion, but what they do is they look to see who's on what side of an issue, and instead of looking at the issue based on its own merits or demerits, they decide based on who's on what side and who's on another side. That is not, and I'm sure there are some conservative groups who do that too, that is not how you decide public policy, particularly if you're a legislator. You read the bill. This was only a two-page bill. I read it. It's not that hard to read. The New York Times reported today that it really wasn't about cloning. That was just a myth put out by the pro-lifers, when, in fact, if you read the bill, it is precisely about cloning. You didn't have to legalize somatic embryonic stem cell research because it's already legal in this country. That would be a superfluous act. It's not illegal to engage in embryonic stem cell research. It's not illegal to clone either, unfortunately. But what they did was legalize cloning. That is the purpose of the bill. That's why they did it. And I can tell you some of the things that they might be thinking about, the biotechnologists who put in this language, because it's way beyond embryonic stem cells when it comes to therapeutic cloning.
Such as
implantation and then abortion to get the organs, the nascent organs. Those are experiments already being done in cows.
So in other words, we're talking about creating a human embryo via somatic nuclear cell transfer.
Right.
We're talking about then taking that embryo and implanting it in the womb, bringing it to at some period of gestation when
Correct.
It's most useful.
Correct.
Performing an abortion so as to keep the organs intact and then harvesting them for various purposes?
Right. Well, harvesting them for example, implantation into the person who created the clone. They can't do that yet in humans because they haven't been able to successfully create cloned humans. But they are doing those experiments right now in cows. I know of two of them. And they've been reported in the establishment media as therapeutic cloning breakthroughs, as if these were about embryonic stem cells. But they weren't. What they did is they made the clone of a cow. They took that cloned embryo and they implanted it into a cow to be gestated. After it reached the fetal stage and the kidneys in this particular case had developed, they aborted that cow. They then took the kidney and they put a skin graft on the cow to see if it would be rejected, the cow that had provided the DNA for the cloning. And it was not rejected, and they called that a big breakthrough because it produced urine. But that's not creating organs with embryonic stem cells. That's creating organs by creating cloned fetuses and aborting them and harvesting their organs. That is, and that would be permitted legally in the New Jersey law if they ever learn how to clone human beings.
One hopeful spot in the story that you tell in your Weekly Standard piece, Cloning in New Jersey, is that some members of the President's Council on Bioethics were willing, at least at some point in this process, to step forward and urge New Jersey Governor James McCreevy to think twice.
Yes, well, he's not going to. He's already said he will sign this bill. But the reason this bill didn't pass earlier this year was because of the media and what I call dissident media, as you know, began to get on this story. I wrote about it, and it was the internet started covering it. A lot of the talk radio shows began to cover it. And then the four members of the President's Council, as you said, wrote a letter, at which point the establishment media had to at least look at it. And at that point, the sponsor of the bill, instead of allowing it to be voted upon or amending it, you know, if there was a mistake here, he could have amended to say no implantation, but you notice the sponsors did not try to amend the bill. All they did was take it off the floor and hide it in the shadows, not kill it, hide it until after the election. Now, with the election over, they came in when there was a lame duck session and did a snap vote, and it passed before the alarm could be raised again. Very nasty legislative process, very duplicitous, and a lot of dishonesty in getting this bill passed.
One more question on that subject, because I do want to allow a little time here at the end for you to give us a quick update on Terry Schiavo. But are you aware of any other bills of a similar nature in other states?
There was an identical bill in Texas, which I believe has died. And there was a bill in Massachusetts that was not the identical language, but would have permitted much of the same activities, which did not pass. And there was a bill in Maryland, which was much more vague than the New Jersey bill, but would have permitted much of the same, because it was so vague, at least could have been construed to permit these activities, and it did not pass. What makes New Jersey so remarkable is that it isn't vague at all if you read the bill. It's quite explicit, where the other cloning bills in Massachusetts and in Maryland were less explicit, and much of our interpretation could be deemed a matter of interpretation, right? You know, while we look at these words this way, someone else would say, oh, but I look at these words that way. With the New Jersey bill, it's very explicit. Let me read it again. The only cloning that is outlawed is this: the replication of a human individual by cultivating a cell with genetic material through the egg, embryo, fetal, and newborn stages into a new human individual. That means if you don't get to the newborn stages, you have not broken the law. You have to go through the whole thing and newborn into a new human individual. That means you could have a ninth-month abortion. In fact, you would be required to have a ninth-month abortion if you hadn't done it previously for a woman not to be a felon. This is the first law, other than perhaps in China, that would require an abortion to keep a woman from becoming a criminal.
In the few minutes left to us here, Wesley, please, a quick update on Terry Schindler Schiavo.
Well, Terry Schiavo is continuing to receive food and fluids through her feeding tube. Judge Baird, who is determining the constitutionality of Terry's law, refused to disqualify himself, even though he said before the governor turned in his papers that the law is presumptively unconstitutional and that Terry's privacy rights are being violated. That's before seeing anything from the governor's side. The Schindlers, who are Terry's parents, have been refused permission to enter into this case as interested parties. Michael Schiavo is represented by the ACLU. If you dehydrated an animal, you'd go to jail. If Florida wanted to dehydrate a condemned prisoner as a means of execution, the ACLU would never stop suing, and they would be right in that situation. Yet in this situation, they have jumped in on Terry, on Michael's side, on the side of killing an innocent human being through dehydration. The Court of Appeals has refused to disqualify Judge Baird, saying that he didn't do anything wrong. The governor was sued in St. Petersburg instead of Tallahassee, as required by the law, so that the governor doesn't have to traipse all over the state defending cases. And the people in Judge Baird said, that's too bad, we're not going to change the jurisdiction to Tallahassee. So what has happened is that Terry Schindler is caught in this, what I call a repeating, like an audio looping tape, right? You have the same trial judges and the same Court of Appeals that keep making all the same decisions, and she's caught in this treadmill, and she can't get out of that small jurisdiction to let other people take a fresh look at this. The guardian ad litem has filed his report recommending that she be given a swallow test. That's the good news. The bad news is that in 38 pages, he never once mentioned that Michael had, in essence, abandoned Terry by living with another woman, falling in love with her, having two children with her, and committing to a new family. And in that situation, the question is, what would Terry want? Would she want her estranged husband? Because you can't call him anything but that under these circumstances. He's committed to a new family. He's having babies with another woman with whom he's lived for now 8 years or so. Would she want her estranged husband to be in charge of her care, or her parents, who have stayed exclusively loyal to her? And the guardian ad litem refused to address that issue, and I submit that's because it makes it harder to make her dead.
Wesley Smith, thank you very much for the update, and thank you for bringing us the information on the New Jersey bill as well. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Todd.
Wesley Smith is a senior fellow for the Discovery Institute. He's the author of several books, including, and I recommend this one, folks, it sets a lot of our conversations with Wesley in their proper context, Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America. He's also written a recent column for the Weekly Standard on that New Jersey bill. You can read for yourself, Cloning in New Jersey. Now read this column on the web at Wesley's website, WesleyJSmith.com, WesleyJSmith.com. I'm going to be completely honest here in the last few minutes of the program. On the subject of, we're coming to the end of the year, this is how we view the support that we get from our listeners here on Issues, Etc. We could cajole people with the law. We could promise them blessings from God if they supported Issues, Etc. in its local and its worldwide outreach. But that would not be right, and that it would not be scriptural. What we do is we do what Scripture tells us to do. We preach Christ. We defend the faith. We teach the truth. We defend life from beginning to end. We contend for truth in an age of anti-truth. We function as the radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. We preach Christ, and we let you know what our needs are. We're honest about it. As we're coming to the end of this year, I am asking you to support Issues, Etc. Our listeners are our only support. With a year-end tax-deductible gift, we're also looking for a $4,000 gift to cover CD expenses for our tape delay affiliates as well. You can order on, I'm sorry, you can give online now at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org. You can also, by credit card, give through our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172, or you can mail us a check at Issues, Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. If you'd like to be the giver of that $4,000 gift, make sure your check says Issues, Etc. CD Fund. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.